All right. Hello, everybody. It's Dr. Ray Heinisch, and I'm joined here in the studio, or not in the studio, in the virtual studio with none other than Blythe Ahlberg. Hey, Blythe.
Hey, Ray. What's happening?
Good stuff. Good stuff. Am I right?
Yeah. The virtual studio is where it's at.
The virtual studio is where it's at. We haven't been pumping out these podcasts as fast as people would like, but people have to understand that because we're doing the Skype now. At the end of the session, when I'm editing the finished product, I actually have to go through and I have to manually alter the volume between your voice and my voice. So every time you talk, I have to change the volume. Every time I talk, I have to change the volume. So it's a little bit extra work.
Wait, so that means you're tired of listening to our voices by the time you're done. Is that right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, I can't even manage to go and listen to us throughout. You know, I should go back after I finish the edited product and make sure everything's good to go and listen to the whole thing. I cannot listen to our voices, not even for another minute.
Oh, I know we do get annoying at some stage. I try to go back and listen to all of our podcasts, right. But you do a great job at the editing, and I do not have to listen to us nearly as much as you do. Oh. So thank you for all that you do. I know the listeners appreciate it.
Yeah, so just bear with us. It takes us a little longer to get these podcasts out, but we're trying, guys. We're trying. All right, so what are we doing in today's podcast?
Well, this is episode 42. Mm-hmm. I just want to say that. We've got a couple years' worth of podcasts under our belt. I'm excited about that. I think that's awesome.
I think you and I should do a best of Cut the Fat podcast.
Ooh, good idea.
So it'll be a best of Cut the Fat podcast. And so maybe we should get to work on that one. So we can go back and kind of give like our top tips throughout the last 2 years. You know, this has been a journey for you and me both, right? When we first started this, we had both been in the fitness and we had both been, into helping people with weight loss. But along the way, we've kind of refined things. We've built upon what we've learned, and it's been a journey for both of us, right?
Oh, for sure. And I've enjoyed every step along the way. Even when we first started out, remember how many takes we had to do?
Oh, my goodness. On the first one, you guys don't know this, but we did the first podcast. And when we finished, we looked at each other, shaking our heads. We were like, oh, that sucked.
That was horrible. And it took us like 20 takes just to do the first one.
I know. And it would probably be good for us to go back and redo that this first couple podcasts, just built, you know, to use what we've learned along the way to kind of redo and revamp those. But that's something for the future.
But that'll be volume two.
It's been a pleasure to do this podcast for you guys for the last two years, and we look forward to doing more of them.
Yeah.
So in today's podcast, here's what we're going to do. I am going to give you what I call the secret sauce of losing weight for life. Okay, this is the secret sauce. I call it the Kata formula. And we're going to get into that just after we get through some of the go through the mailbag and talk about some of the questions that you guys have asked us on Facebook. And Blythe, why don't you give everybody an idea as to how to get to us on Facebook?
Okay, sure. All you have to do is search Cut the Fat Podcast, all one long word, in your little search box on Facebook, and we should come right up. Like our page, friend us, and feel free to leave comments, questions. We get a lot of pats on the back and things like that. We've had a couple, what would you call them? Call-outs, maybe, on Facebook, which we appreciate all of the input that you guys can give us.
Awesome. And you can, of course, if you get a chance, go on iTunes and rate us there as well. That would be fantastic. Okay.
So, love the rating. They help us climb the scale, actually, of the Fat Loss Podcast.
Right. And you know, you and I, we're kind of competitive folks. So we do want to one day be the number one weight loss podcast on iTunes. So if you guys help us get there, that's great. Otherwise, let's just get into the podcast.
Okay.
So go ahead. Give us question number one. Let's go ahead and answer that.
Okay. Well, I went on Facebook and I grabbed some of the more recent questions that people have been asking. There's not a lot of questions on there. There are some on the discussion board, and I didn't take a lot from the discussion board because those are kind of up for discussion and other people have chimed in. But I picked some of the ones that were posted on Facebook that may or may not have already had an answer to them, but ones that I thought that most people could kind of relate with. Okay. Right. The first one that caught my attention was a great question, and it was asked by Marcy. She had asked the question, we addressed this in a previous podcast, why shouldn't I eat carbohydrates and fat together? You and I had talked about in a previous podcast why pizza was like one of the worst foods out there. I know it's a food everybody loves, but even bagels, you know, everybody knows pizza is junk food, but most people perceive bagels as a health food. Ray, why are carbohydrates and fat mixed together in like a pizza pie so bad for you?
Or, you know, hamburger and fries, a lot of the staples of living in America. I'm sure it's this way in, like, we have a lot of Australian listeners. So in Australia, I think it's similar. Even though the foods may be different, it's slightly different. The makeup of the meals is somewhat similar. It's protein, fat, and carbohydrates. Mm-hmm. And across Europe, I understand, it's in Europe, the portions are smaller. But again, they're also kind of developing the same type of lifestyle. So the reason is, well, first let me say this. A lot of weight loss gurus suggest combining carbs with fat because they say, well, that lowers the glycemic index. That is a very, very bad idea because what ends up happening is carbohydrates stimulate the production of insulin. And whenever we produce insulin, fat burning stops and we become a fat storing machine. So when we combine carbohydrates along with fat, we're increasing the quantity of the sugars in the blood, we're increasing the quantity of the fat in the blood, mm-hmm. and we're increasing the quantity of the insulin. That is the perfect storm for storing fat.
Which most of us aren't trying to do.
Right. So we want to avoid that combination if possible. Okay. If we do then we should be able to – it should be easier for you to lose weight if you can prevent yourself from eating carbs with high levels of fat.
Okay, which is pizza. It's coated in cheese. Dense carbohydrates are the crust.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, that's like the perfect combination. So you want to – oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
You mentioned the bagel and cream cheese as well. Yeah. That's a staple of American breakfast. Like I said, the hamburger and fries, all these things. Chicken on the Barbie with a baked potato. You know that again. You start to not chicken, but if it's a fried chicken with a baked potato, then you have another whole other situation there.
Okay, next question.
I have a question. Uh-huh. This is one that was one of the more recent posts, and that was, I've just started listening. Should I start with cut the fat? I'm assuming they're talking about losing. Should I start by focusing on weight loss or fat loss or with building muscle? Apparently, they have a lot of weight to lose, and they want to know, where should I start? Very good question. And the problem is, I don't think it's an either-or concept here. Now, what we should do, and I think you'll agree with this because we've talked about this in the past, is you should focus most of your energies, most of your attention on nutrition. And if we're going to distribute 100% of our daily energy, we would say 80% of that energy should be distributed towards nutrition, 20% towards exercise and activity. Is that how you would put it?
That's exactly how I would put it.
Most people think that when people are out of shape and overweight, that they don't have a lot of muscle and they need to add muscle. But really, the truth is people who are overweight have a tendency to carry a significant amount of muscle. Most people don't realize that. I mean, eating lots of food is anabolic. Eating lots of food causes not just the fat tissues to grow, it also causes muscle tissue to grow. And when we do body fat analysis on people who are overweight, and then after they lose the weight, we do another body fat analysis. If exercise is not a significant component of their diet, of their program, they will actually lose weight. They will also lose muscle along the way.
Mm-hmm.
And why is that? Because food is anabolic, especially when we're eating large quantities of food, and then we decrease that quantity of food. The body says, well, food and calories are now fewer, so we need to get rid of some of this metabolically active tissue. So you can mitigate that or prevent some of that by keeping on a good resistance training workout? And you answered this question for them. You said basically you need to do both. But if you're going to focus on something, focus on nutrition and add resistance training. That was your recommendation?
Yeah, because I think as the question was stated, it was, she was kind of making us choose between, or not making us, but she, the way she posed the question, it was like one was superior to the other. When in fact, I think everything in conjunction is definitely the best formula.
Right. And I think people make a mistake when they think they have to jump head over heels into both exercise and nutrition. I don't think you need to do that. Always remember, especially when you're at the beginning stages of your weight loss journey, always remember that you just need to pick the low-hanging fruit. So from a nutrition perspective, yeah, make changes there. Make significant changes. From an exercise perspective, you don't have to do a lot. In fact, what I recommend people do is earn your gym time. Start off by exercising or going to the gym and committing to one day per week. And then once you've been able to consistently go one day per week on a regular basis for, let's say, 3 or 4 weeks, you can say, okay, I'm going to add 2 days per week. You're going to go from 1 day to 2 days. And then once you've consistently been able to manage that, go to 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to kind of earn your time in the gym. Most people think they got to, well, I got to go to the gym 5 or 6 days a week right from the start. Not true. Focus more of your attention, more of your precious energy on nutrition, and start with just, let's say, 1 day a week or 4 minutes of exercise a day. If you want to start exercising daily, start with 4 minutes. Work on one muscle group. Work it to exhaustion. And then the next day, do a different muscle group. Work that one to exhaustion.
Right. And that's easy to integrate that into your lifestyle. It makes it so much easier.
Absolutely. And you don't need that much. If you were to just do nutrition, you would lose significant amounts of weight and significant amounts of fat.
Mm-hmm.
If you just focus all your attention there. But you will gain extra benefit by just adding a little dose of exercise and resistance training into that mix.
Yes, I totally agree. And there was something else I was going to add on to the end of that.
You lost it?
I lost it. But I do have another question if we're done answering that one.
Uh-huh, we're done.
Amy asked the question. She said, I am always under calorie. And I had mentioned that my husband, John, has a hard time getting all of his calories. And he's a big guy. I mean, he's someone who's been bodybuilding for years. It's easy for him to get food in. But yet, all of that experience and all of those years of eating, he still has a hard time reaching his ultimate caloric goal for muscle growth and maintenance. Anyway, she says, I'm always under calorie, but she says she feels full and satiated when she eats and she has great workouts. How important is it that I actually meet my caloric needs? I'm going to guess that Amy probably had like a basal metabolic rate test done or something like that that gave her the calculations for her caloric needs. I'm just going to guess that she's got a specific number that she knows that she needs to hit, more so than just, you know, coming up with a number that she thinks she needs to hit.
Okay.
I think she's going for a specific number. My answer to that is, number one, what is your objective? And I know I'm answering that with a question, but if your objective is to maintain where you're at, I see no problem. As long as you're maintaining, continue doing what you're doing. But if you're trying to see change and it's not happening the way you want it to happen, you're probably going to have to bump up your calories or maybe add one meal to the day, which will in turn bump up your calories. But, you know, you're going to have to be your own test subject.
Yeah, I think most people will use some sort of calculation to determine their caloric needs. And those calculations can be off by quite a bit. So if she had a metabolic rate test that's called an indirect calorimetry test, then that would be a pretty good indication that that is an accurate value for you. Otherwise, probably the next best way is to get a body fat percentage done. Use calculations that are based on your lean body mass. And then if she has that accurate number and she's still having difficulty reaching that minimum, then what I usually recommend people do is to focus on the breakfast. Add the extra calories to the breakfast, because that's when your body's most ready to take in nutrition, is first thing in the morning. and your insulin sensitivity is higher in the morning. You've mm-hmm. burned a lot of that stored glycogen from in your liver from the 8 hours of fasting while you slept. And so your body's going to be more receptive to that. So one way of doing that, you can add an extra 200, 300, 400, 500 calories, depending upon your needs, simply by adding a fruit smoothie, a protein fruit smoothie to your morning breakfast.
And that's I was just about to say that.
Yeah, that's a very easy way to add some extra calories to the mix. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You actually mentioned that in the last podcast that we did, that that's a very easy way to add an extra few hundred calories. And get creative, you know? Smoothies can be fun.
They definitely can. Add a handful of spinach. Add some spirulina. Add some coconut flakes. What else? Give us some other smoothie tips to improve the...
Peanut butter, banana, wheat germ, flax.
Flaxseed.
I like to add Udo's Choice Oil to mine because I have a hard time getting my fats in. I just know that about myself. I like to add that in. I like to add ice. You know, if you like something thicker, like a shake, add ice instead of just water. Try them with almond milk. If you're someone who is a soy drinker or someone who uses regular milk, try the almond milk. I mean, there are so many ways you can go out there. You know, what's cool is I found, I didn't find it recently, but there is a protein powder out there. I don't remember what it's called Nectar. And it's got like fruit juice flavors. So you can get creative. Add a scoop of I believe it's a whey protein. It might not just be whey, but they're different types of flavors. There's like a strawberry flavor. So you can make strawberry smoothies with real strawberries and ice, flavor it with the strawberry nectar, and it is great.
Very good. Mm-hmm. You know, I personally do a vanilla whey protein. That's what I like to add because it adds the sweetness to it, and then I get the real, you know, berry flavor from the actual berries that I put in there. But there are so many options, like you say. Don't get stuck in one way of doing it. Enjoy yourselves, guys. Have fun with this.
Yeah, it should be fun. If it's going to be a lifestyle change, you got to keep it interesting. And the last question I wrote down anyway, you might have another one, was from Raja. She had asked, and you didn't answer this question, but she had asked, stretching after resistance training or stretching after cardio, which is better? Do you want to answer that, or do you want me to give my take and then?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay. Well, my take is stretching. I always do a warm up. The first thing I do when I walk into the gym is I'll hop on the elliptical or I'll hop on the treadmill to warm up my joints. I'm getting a little older. I'm not saying I'm old, but I'm getting a little older, and I find that walking for a few minutes to get everything kind of loose and warmed up kind of gets me in the mood for a better workout. And it helps warm up my muscles a little bit. I'll do a light, light stretch because at that point in time, after 5 minutes walking on an incline on the treadmill, I'm not totally ready to go, you know, do heavy squats or anything like that. So I'll do a light stretch. The most important way, in my belief, to stretch is doing the actual exercise that you intend to do with weight. Do it either without weight or very, very light weight to start with. Go through the full range of motion. Put your body through that exercise without a lot of resistance as you go through your workout. So say you want to do squats. Do the squat with some very, very light weight, and then you can start adding weight as you go.
Right.
And that will give you the best stretch. It's like an active stretch. After my workouts, I always stretch just because it's something I am always trying to work on is my flexibility. Yoga is great for that. There are Pilates classes and things like that that help with flexibility. So if you have access to anything like that, I recommend them. I mean, I think the more variety, the better. But I do always stretch after my workouts just because I feel warm, and that's when I let my heart rate come down.
Yeah, the old way of doing it was we would recommend, I remember back in college, they would recommend stretching prior to lifting weights in order to prevent muscle tears. But what they discovered was that when people did that, it actually increased their likelihood of injury. It didn't decrease it. And so now the approach is, no, don't stretch the muscle before, because that increases the laxity, the movements within the joints. What you want to do is you want to do the activity. You want to prepare the muscle for the exact activity it's about to do under a loaded fashion. So you start with a light weight or no weight. You go through the motion. For instance, you do this full squat. You maybe do six or eight of those. You add a little bit of weight. You do another 4 to 6. You do more weight, 4 to 6, and then you just you rest, and then you get into the actual fully loaded set of whatever exercise you're pursuing. So that's a good approach. Good question.
Yeah, I thought it was a great question. And we, like I said, we did answer that on Facebook already. You had a great answer there. But I like to mention it in our podcast, because I know everybody here isn't on Facebook, but I do recommend they get on there.
Yeah, at the time of this podcast, I think we have about 1,700 people on Facebook, or close to 2,000. And yeah. I know that there's over 12,000 people that at least download the podcast. So if you're not on there, guys, you got to hop on Facebook and visit us there and like our page and get the updates there as well. Because we don't get to answer all of the questions here on the podcast.
We've got some great people that visit that site daily and also help answer some of the questions or add their insight. I think it's great. A little shout out to Judd. He's always on there.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And I've got one more question here, and this is from the discussion group, the discussion panel. And it says, I'm trying to figure out why I crave fast food uncontrollably after I lift weights. I'm 6'4", 380 pounds. I'm trying to lose my gut, but whenever I lift weights or have a really intense cardio session, I will go nuts if I don't get a double monster burger. Please help. Okay, so this is a very interesting question, and we had touched on this when we talked about aerobic activity and how aerobic activity doesn't often result in fat loss. It doesn't necessarily help people lose fat, at least not in the research literature to date. And what scientists are discovering is that there are two types of people when it comes to this type of situation. There are compensators and there are non-compensators. Now, non-compensators are the lucky ones. Those are the ones who, when they work out, they don't have an appreciable increase in their appetite. But the compensators are people that, after they work out, they have a compensatory mechanism that kicks in that causes them to eat more calories over the following, let's say, 24 to 48 hours to pull back into the body those calories that were robbed through the exercise and activity. So it sounds like our friend here on Facebook is what we would call a compensator, somebody whose body is trying to resist the calories that are being burned by restoring the glycogen loss. So this is probably attributed to an evolved process within our bodies, within our chemistry, that is designed to prevent us or keep us safe. You got to think about it, that if we the times that we would use glycogen, which is the sugar that's stored in the muscles and the liver of the body, the times we would resort to the glycogen use is during bursts of intense activity. Now, Blythe, if we were living out in the bush, in the jungle, when would we have bursts of activity?
Well, let's see, if you're trying to spear a lion and you spear the lion and you didn't kill it, so now you're running for your life, that would definitely be one.
That's a good example. So when you're running for your life. So the body places great value on glycogen stores within the muscle. This is why I think a lot of very low-carb diets like Atkins programs have a tendency to lose their effectiveness and ultimately fail in the long run, because you're really disturbing the glycogen stores within the muscle. If you don't have glycogen in the muscles, you're not going to have that burst of energy that you need in order to run away from lions. And because we live in a stressed society, your body always thinks that you're trying to run away from something, because stress is a nonspecific response to some sort of stressor. So when you're having family problems or you're having work problems, your boss is yelling at you, your body doesn't know the difference between that and running away from a lion. So what ends up happening is the body compensates. And in this case, it's an exaggerated response. And some of our listeners, I'm sure, have the same exaggerated response. So what is the solution? Do you want to give your tips or should I just continue?
Go ahead. I'll add at the end.
Okay. So one of my favorite authors on this subject is a gentleman. He's actually an Aussie, an Australian personal trainer. His name is Dr. Paul Cribb. And he writes on a topic that's called the metabolic window. Now, when he's talking about this, he's talking about using this metabolic window to help promote muscle building while simultaneously promoting fat loss. And what he hypothesizes, or what he has studied in his research, is that there is this window, this metabolic window of opportunity that occurs from probably 20 to 30 minutes before the workout to 3 hours after the workout. Now, I'm going to paraphrase some of the recommendations that he makes. These probably aren't going to be spot on, but I think they're going to be close enough to help you guys. Number one is before the workout. If this is you, I'm sorry, I didn't get the gentleman's name who wrote this post on Facebook. But if you're like him, then one thing you can do is you can start by what we call preemptive eating. You want to have a protein shake before you work out, and probably some source of carbohydrates. Now, I know that kind of goes against some of the stuff that we've talked about in the past, where carbs will cause insulin to increase, which will potentially decrease fat burning. But we also talk about how you've got to be your own guru. You have to put yourself through its own clinical study in order to find out what works. So this may work for you. It's something to try. It is more important that we do this type of preemptive eating in somebody who has this compensatory eating mechanism that kicks in after the workout. So we have a high protein source, we have a carb source, and then we wait 30 minutes and then we exercise. And then directly after the exercise, you have another protein dose and another dose of carbohydrates. Again, it's kind of counterintuitive because you're going to be giving your body a little bit of insulin. But the intention and what he believes is that that insulin is going to promote storage of sugar into the muscles, because the muscles are going to be so sensitive to the insulin at that time. And then about an hour after that, you have a real meal where you have a real protein source. This isn't a shake. It's a real protein source, like some chicken, some fish, and you have another carb source. It's a controlled carb source. So you're getting a lower glycemic carb at this point. Something like a sweet potato or some sort of carbohydrate that is lower glycemic.
Okay.
Oatmeal, brown rice, something along those lines. And then finally, another hour after that, you may have another protein shake or something like that, just to give your body the nutrients that it needs. So just to summarize, there is this metabolic window that lasts about 3 hours from the start of the exercise to the end of, to this 3-hour period, 2 hours after the workout, that allows you to replenish the nutrient stores within the muscle without impacting fat loss. That is the philosophy there. And I think it's something definitely to try. And especially in a case like this where you know that you're a compensatory eater.
Yes. And actually, I know that I am. It's funny that you bring that up, because I'm definitely the type of person where if I have a hardcore leg workout, the next day I have to keep myself out of the kitchen. I am starving all day long. Now, something I hadn't, well, I guess I tried it in the past, but I didn't actually know. I wasn't aware of what I was doing, was having carbohydrates before my workout. I've always been an advocate of somebody who doesn't eat carbs, say an hour or two prior to my workout. So I dip into my fat stores and then I'll have a shake right after my workout and then go home and have a meal, you know, whether it be an hour or 2 hours later. So I think that becoming an expert on yourself is the way to find out if that's going to work for you. Number one, you've got to try it. And I'm going to say that some people will get results just by shifting gears that way, rather than trying to, you know, stay out of the kitchen and
right.
and stay away from the burger and deplete yourself of those calories. You know, his body, the gentleman who put the post up on the discussion board, his body is trying to tell him something by those cravings. And I tell most people that are realistic with themselves that, hey, if you're craving something, there's probably a reason why. You know, if you're craving French fries, maybe it's the sodium you're lacking. Maybe, you know, maybe you're not getting enough carbs into your diet. Maybe your fats are low. There are so many questions that you can go back and assess and then test to see what it is that your body's actually lacking. But that's a cool way to go. That's something to try. For yeah. those of you who know that you're going to be starving after a hard workout, try it.
Try some preemptive eating. And
yeah.
and you drew a very good point there, and that is your body has cravings for reasons. Now, your body cannot crave a hamburger and fries. It cannot crave a hamburger and fries. It cannot crave a piece of cheesecake. It craves something within those foods.
Right.
So what he, you know, he says, well, I go nuts if I don't have a double monster burger. Well, the truth is, you don't need a double monster burger. Your body needs the protein that's in that double monster burger, or it needs the carb that's in that bun and fries that comes along with that double monster burger, or it needs the sodium that's in there. You have to kind of play with things and find out. Ask yourself, what does my body really need? It's not some specifically refined food. Your body cannot crave those foods because to your body, it doesn't even know they exist. All the body knows exists is protein, fat, carbs, vitamins, minerals, and I already said fat, but essential fatty acids.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only thing that your body knows exists from a chemistry perspective.
Right. And being realistic with yourself, that's a big step, is by saying, okay, well, I'm craving the monster burger. The monster burger is the mental image that your brain is putting on what it's craving.
Right.
Right. Like you said, it's not actually craving that. But that's something that you like. It's something you've enjoyed in the past. It's something that your brain has decided to attach the image to what it's craving. So you've got to wipe that image clean and right, figure out what it really is that you're craving. And again, it's testing.
It's testing. And we're going to get into that here in a second. But, you know, I'll point out that in this case, it may be also an indication that you are dieting too heavily.
Mm-hmm.
When you've got 380 pounds on your body, remember, low-hanging fruit. Don't just go to a 1,200-calorie diet if you've been eating 4,000 calories a day for the last 10 years, right?
Right, and this is something bodybuilders come across all the time, is, you know, making sure that you're not cutting out too quickly. If you go on any bodybuilding discussion board with natural bodybuilders on there, you'll see that it's a common discussion.
Right, and so that may be your case as well. And again, that may be what you're craving. Your body just may be saying, you know what, kid, you're not eating enough calories. Eat more calories. That's all I want. It doesn't have to be a burger, but just give me some more calories.
Right. And it could be as simple as that.
Right. Okay. So those are the Facebook questions. I hope you guys got some value out of that. Now, into the secret sauce, Blythe, of long-term weight loss. This is what I call the secret sauce formula. It's called the Kata formula for weight loss. And guess what? It works with any diet.
Okay. Do share.
Okay. So let me give you guys some background. In martial arts, we have this thing called a kata. I believe it's spelled K-A-T-A. But what a kata is it's a series of movements that you practice over and over again. Now, in the sense of the martial arts, what that may mean is that you may imagine that an attacker is throwing a right hook punch at your face. And so you may have this series of movements that you learn. For example, it might be a left block followed by a right cross followed by a left snap kick. And they'll oftentimes learn these very complex series of movements and punches and kicks and blocks that are called katas. And the katas are performed and practiced daily. And you are supposed to master these katas. Why? Because when somebody throws a hook punch at you, you have no time to sit and think about what your next move will be. Mm. You have to just react. And so the kata is designed to move from this from your conscious brain into your subconscious brain. So if somebody surprises you with a right hook punch, you'll just all of a sudden react, bam, 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 and they're on the ground. Almost before you can even realize what just went on. So that is the purpose of the martial arts kata. Well, I have a different spelling of that word. I spell it C-A-T-A-A for kata, okay? And I'm going to tell you what that acronym stands for in just a moment. But before I do, I kind of have to give you another background. This is how most people go through the dieting process or the weight loss process. What they do is they go out, they find the latest book. Let's say they open up the Metabolic Effect Diet. They open it up on the table. They read it. They say, this is great stuff. This is going to work for me. So they put it into action. And what you end up doing is you get some result. you lose some weight, and then all of a sudden the weight loss stalls, as it does with practically any program, mm-hmm. right?
Like, mm-hmm. Yeah.
It doesn't matter what program you choose. Almost
everybody, every program.
Everybody, every program, there is a stall involved. So you, and we've talked about this in the past, haven't we? We've said,
yeah.
Ready yourself for the stall, because it happens no matter what. And so what most people do is they close the book, they put it on the shelf, and then they totally defect to a whole new program. So they grab the next book, the next bestseller, they open it up on the desk and say, this is great stuff. I'm going to go and I'm going to do this. And I'm going to lose weight. And they, sure enough, they lose some weight. And then guess what happens? They stall. Mm-hmm. And they're back to square one. They close the book on the shelf, next book, open it up. And this process starts over and over and over again. How many of you guys have I just described? Are you guilty of this?
Did everybody just raise their hand? Yes, I'm guilty of that.
I'm guilty of it too.
You know what happens with me though? And some people might like to know this, is that I know what works for me for the most part. I mean, like I said about the heavy leg day and eating carbs before maybe a heavy leg workout so I don't crave all the calories the following day. Okay, that's, I can always tweak what I'm doing, but I do know the formula that does work for me and I stick to it. However, I always reach a stalling point. And what I do at that pivotal moment or pivotal time, do I stop what I'm doing or do I continue on remembering that consistency is key?
Absolutely. So that brings us to the Kata formula.
Yes.
All right. So here it is. So the Kata formula stands for C-A-T-A-A. All right. C stands for commit. Commit to something. Commit to one thing, one program, one book. Take all the other books, all the other magazines, put them in a box, tape the box up, put it in the attic, and forget about it. This is your program, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Okay? So you open up the book, you get on it, you then, what do? You assess your results. You say, well, I'm losing weight, And then all of a sudden, as you're assessing your results, I'm not losing weight anymore. Or you are losing weight, but you're beginning to feel resistance. You're beginning to say, maybe this program isn't right for me because I'm not going to be able to maintain this for the next, for my whole life. So you start to doubt the integrity of the program. So what you don't do is you don't defect to a new program. Why? Because you've committed to this program. You've assessed, you're not getting the result, or you feel like you're about to stall on the program. So what do you do next? Blythe, what does the T stand for?
The T stands for tweak.
Tweak.
You need to make some minor tweaks and continue on. Stick to the same program, but tweak it so it does fit into your lifestyle. Or make some tweaks so you can continue to lose and get results.
Right. So what kinds of tweaks could we make to something? We could, for example, we could say, all right, well, I was jogging 5 days a week on this program. So okay. Instead of jogging, I will do resistance training 3 days a week and jog 2 days a week.
Okay. And or instead of just a jog, maybe you add a couple of sprints in there.
Right.
Just change up the pattern. Yeah.
Right. You do interval training in place of the jogs. And then you just change that one thing. Tweaking does not mean make major shifts. Tweaking is change one variable so you can test how that variable impacts the total program, right? So if you're on a program and you discover that it's just taking too long. I can't spend an hour and a half on the treadmill every night, 7 days a week. So how might you tweak that? Well, you might say, I can do 20 minutes of interval, 3 days a week. Let's see what happens when I shift it to that.
Yeah, and you'll get totally different results or totally more results just from making that little shift. You're actually saving yourself time. You'll probably feel better about your workouts. You've got more time in your day. I mean, one little tweak like that, and you've got a whole, yeah, make all the difference in the world. And this is where I like to tell people that the plan is very simple. It's applying it that's not easy. So it's very, very simple. But it's not necessarily easy for all of us to fall into. And that's where doing something that's going to be realistic for you comes into play.
Right. So how do we know if the tweak that we've made is making a difference? That brings us to the AA, which stands for what, Blythe?
Assess again. That means you need to assess what you're doing. Notice if you're making any gains or results. You know, check, have your body fat checked. Try your favorite shorts on that you're trying to fit into. You know, the scale is one way to monitor. We always talk about that. But assess the program again. How convenient is this for you? Are you making it to your workouts? Are, you know, go through and work your whole program through. Assessing will only help you refine your program.
Now, the assess again component is slightly different than the first assess in the Kata formula. It's slightly different in this way. When you're, you know, in your initial assessment, you're really just looking at what kind of result am I getting? Am I losing weight again? Is this easier to maintain? In the assess again program, you're taking a little bit more of an in-depth view of it. First question you got to ask yourself is, did I really stay true to the commitment? Because if you remember from old podcasts, we said there are two reasons you're not losing weight. Either your program sucks or your follow-through sucks. If you have a good program but your follow-through sucks, there's a reason for that. And so we can begin to dig into that and tweak it in ways that allows us to have the same kind of variable with a little bit more convenience to it. So you've got to ask, did I really stay committed, stay true to the commitment? Did I do my interval sessions 3 days a week like I said I was going to do? Because if you didn't, you really didn't give it a try, right? So after the assess, again, well, that's question number one. Then you have to ask, what one variable can I commit to change for, let's say, the next 3 weeks and see if I get a new result? So after the assess again, what comes next, Blythe? The C, commit.
Oh, yes. Sorry.
Because in martial arts, a kata is done. It's mastered. It is a process you master. When do you master something? Never. You never master something. It's always a work in progress. So
there's
this process
of
kata, when you do a martial arts kata, it doesn't matter if you're a black belt, a 10th degree black belt, you go back and you continue to do white belt material. You continue to do yellow belt material. Why do you do that? Because mastery is not a destination, it's a journey. And with the kata formula, what do? Well, you go back to the C and you commit again to the new program, the new tweaked program. You assess, you then tweak it yet again, and then you assess it again. And you just continue this circle. And it's a lifelong process because you will never get to the program that is 100% perfect for you. You can always make a tiny little tweak to it and enjoy the process of discovery that occurs.
You'll learn so much if you pay attention to your body. That's probably the part I find most fun, most intriguing about the whole like fitness and weight loss journey. I get a little bit greedy because I like to hear how my clients are getting results rather than just doing it on myself. I get to help out other people, which is my draw, I think, to the whole industry. I love that. So, you know, if you're doing this with a partner, share your results with somebody. You know, be proud of yourself for sticking to a program and making it a lifelong habit.
And like I say, be the guru. You know, you may start with somebody else's program. You may start with somebody else's formula, so to speak. But then you end up with something that is special and unique to you. When somebody comes up to you and asks you, well, what diet are you following? You can say, I'm following my diet. I may have started with this program, but it's evolved to something that is unique to me. What's going to work for me isn't going to work for you.
Right.
That's what being the guru is about. It's about finding your formula, not just for weight loss. This goes for life in general. Everybody wants to go to the quote-unquote guru that gives you the solution that's going to make you happier, richer, more successful, or in better shape. It doesn't exist. You know, you can only start with something. You can only find a framework from which to build your own program from.
Right. It lies within. The secret lies within.
Yes. Awesome. Well, I think that concludes today's show.
Yeah. You know what? I think we answered some great questions. I love your secret sauce. I like that you labeled it as a food, so we will all remember. I am a food addict at heart. I love sauces, but no, I think that's awesome. I like that you came up with that acronym for us. Easy to remember. and something we can all implement today.
Awesome. So give everybody the final notes.
Yes, guys, if you have not found our podcast or our website, we've got recipes, we've got a blog spot, we've got a little video that you can download, the ultimate weight loss tool on there. If you watch the video, it'll give you instructions on what to do. www.cutthefatpodcast.com. You can also find us on Facebook, Cut the Fat Podcast, all one long word in the search box there on Facebook. We will come up, like the page, post a question, get on our discussion board. We love to stay involved with you guys. So get on there, ask questions, and I believe we're going to be leading you guys to the Grilled Lincolns today. Is that right?
That's right. As always, the Grilled Lincolns, something new you guys enjoy, and we'll see you at the next Cut the Fat Podcast.
Bye, guys.
Twist of what you know is true. You're in a cloudy hole where shit don't touch you, and you feel a place to pop the pussy's glue. And all the sticky things that keep me silent are the same things that make your safe world violent. Make you feel your days, but for now I wish you'd just come back when you're okay. Forget your shoes, just wear your flip-flops in the snow. It's hard to really care.